Welcome to Music History Monday for April 8th, 2024. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is The Guy Who Wrote the Waltz. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/robertgreenbergmusic, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week. We mark the death on April 8, 1858, 166 years ago today, of the Austrian composer, editor, and music publisher Anton Diabelli in Vienna at the age of 76. Born on September 5, 1781, his enduring fame is based on a waltz of his composition that became the basis for Beethoven's epic Diabelli Variations for Piano. Quick Work. We are, fairly or unfairly, going to make rather quick work of Herr Diabelli. That's because, with all due respect, what I really want to talk about is Beethoven's Diabelli Variations. There's a powerful ulterior motive at work here as well. In a field of great recordings, my numero uno favorite Diabelli Variations is the recording made by the Milan-born Italian pianist Maurizio Pollini in 1998 and released by Deutsche Grammophon in 2000. Pollini passed away at the age of 82 on March 23rd, 2024, 16 days ago. As such, we will honor Maestro Pollini in tomorrow's Dr. Bob Prescribes, even as we celebrate his unequaled performance of Beethoven's Variations. Anton Diabelli, 1781 to 1858. Despite his Italian surname, Anton Diabelli was Austrian-born and bred. He was born in Matzi, a market town just outside of Salzburg. He was a musical child, and typical of almost every musically talented boy of his time and place. And by place, we're referring to Catholic Europe. He was musically schooled as a chorister in a boys' choir, in Diabelli's case, at the Salzburg Cathedral, where he almost certainly studied composition with Joseph Haydn's younger brother, Michael Haydn, 1737 to 1806. By the time he was 19 years old, in 1800, Diabelli had composed a number of large-scale works, including 6 masses. It was in that year that Diabelli, who had been trained for the priesthood, was packed off to the monastery at Reitenhaslach in the southeastern German state of Bavaria. Being shut in at the monastery would have precluded Anton Diabelli from doing any of those things that were to make him famous. But in 1803, current events allowed both Diabelli and posterity to catch a major break. Here's what happened. Between 1802 and 1814, a process known as German mediatization took place. What this meant was that German-speaking territories occupied by Napoleonic France were secularized. Properties owned by the Catholic Church, including monasteries, were shut down, and the property was transferred to civil possession. Quote, altogether, hundreds of monasteries and other Catholic religious foundations were closed. It has been said that the final recess of 1803 did to German land ownership what the Revolution had done in France, unquote. What this means is that in 1803, the now 22-year-old Anton Diabelli was stripped of his cassock and out of a job. Newly secularized, He moved to Vienna, where he set himself up as a piano and guitar teacher and worked as a proofreader for a music publishing house. Along the way, the clever young man learned the music publishing business, even as he continued to compose on the side. In 1817, the now 36-year-old Diabelli took the plunge. He opened his own music publishing house. Partnered with someone named Pietro Cappi, the firm of Cappi and Diabelli built its reputation and its financial success on arranging opera tunes and dance music for piano, fairly easy arrangements that could be played at home by amateurs. But this doesn't mean that Cappi and Diabelli ignored serious music, and this is where Anton Diabelli earned his second place in posterity. We'll discuss how he earned his first place in a bit. Around 1819, Diabelli became aware of the music of a shy and obscure local composer named Franz Peter Schubert. In 1821, Diabelli's firm was the first to publish Schubert's music, a song entitled Erlkönig, Elf King, that had been composed in 1816. Cappi and Diabelli continued to publish Schubert's music until 1823, when Pietro Cappi and Anton Diabelli parted ways. In 1824, Diabelli launched his own publishing house, calling it Diabelli and Company. Franz Schubert died on November 19, 1828, at the obscenely young age of 31. At the time of his death, the vast majority of Schubert's music, and here we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of works, were as of yet unpublished. Diabelli purchased a considerable portion of those unpublished works from Schubert's brother, Ferdinand. So rich was Diabelli's take from Schubert's estate that his firm continued to publish new Schubert works for over 30 years after Schubert's death. If Anton Diabelli earned his second place in posterity for his service to the music of Franz Schubert, he earned his first for a little project he dreamed up in 1819. The project. Anton Diabelli had a genuine talent for marketing, a talent illustrated by a charity project he dreamt up and initiated in early 1819. He sent a waltz of his own composition to 50 composers living in Austria and invited each one of them to compose a single variation on the waltz, on the theme. Diabelli's plan was to publish the set as an anthology entitled Patriotic Artists Club, and distribute the profits to widows and children left orphaned by the Napoleonic Wars. The list of composers who contributed variations reads like both a who's who and a who is no longer who of contemporary Austrian music. Among the known composers who contributed variations were Franz Schubert, Johann Nepomuk Hummel, Ignaz Moscheles, and Carl Czerny. Czerny also arranged for one of his piano students to provide a variation, an 11-year-old wunderkind from Hungary named Franz Liszt. The roster of forgotten composers is long and is headed by the name Franz Xaver Wolfgang Mozart. Yes, that was Wolfgang Mozart's youngest surviving son. And further includes such non-household compositional names as Ignaz Asmer, Karl Maria von Bocklet, Leopold Eustatius Čapek, Johann Baptist Gensbacher, Johann Peter Pixis, and a host of other long-forgotten composers. The theme. The Cantankerous Louis van Beethoven, 1770 to 1827, was among the composers to receive Diabelli's theme and the invitation to participate in the project. Beethoven's initial reaction to both Diabelli's theme and the project was, negative. Writing with excruciating British restraint, the famed musicologist Sir Donald Francis Tovey, 1875 to 1940, observed that, quote, Beethoven was about to begin the Ninth Symphony, and his first impulse was doubtless to advise Diabelli, with Beethovenish precision, to go elsewhere, unquote. Beethoven dismissed Diabelli's theme as a Schusterfleck, a cobbler's patch, and the variation project itself as being entirely beneath his dignity as a composer. But then Beethoven started thinking about the theme's harmonic framework, a harmonic framework that caught his attention and that ultimately convinced him to write a full set of variations of his own. Consequently, it was not Diabelli's thematic melody, but rather its underlying harmonic structure that became the theme of Beethoven's variations. The result is a set of 33 variations of unprecedented harmonic nuance and complexity. In his book, Structural Functions of Harmony, the 20th century composer Arnold Schoenberg, 1874 to 1951, himself no slouch when it came to harmonic complexity, asserts that the Diabelli variations, quote, in respect to its harmony, deserves to be called the most adventurous work by Beethoven, unquote. To my ear, Diabelli's theme sounds less like a complete thematic entity than it does an accompaniment to an implied thematic entity. And I do believe this is how Beethoven perceived Diabelli's theme as well, as a plastic object of utter neutrality that could be manipulated in any way he chose. Having a good time. By every account, once Beethoven decided to compose his variations on Anton Diabelli's theme, he had a hell of a good time writing the piece, which he composed between 1819 and 1823. A good time? This does not fit our traditional romanticized view of Beethoven the composer, quote, as an artist wrestling with himself and his God to capture and portray the inmost depths of his feelings and experiences, struggling always against the physical limits imposed upon him by his bad health, working and reworking his ideas in a blaze of searing, white, hot creative heat, battling vainly to find a day, a moment of peace and joy in his otherwise lonely and twisted existence, unquote, and blobbly bloop de blah blah blah. Yes, I suppose the description I just read might apply to Mr. B at certain particular moments of his creative life, but please, no one could or would live at that pitch of creative and emotional fervor for long without simply blowing up like Spinal Tap's drummer. It's true, Beethoven had a good time composing his Diabelli variations, and all the evidence we need to support that statement can be found in the music itself. For example, Variation 22 is Beethoven's famous parody variation of the manservant Leporello's aria, Night and Day I Slave Away, from Mozart's opera Don Giovanni, a variation Beethoven based on a tiny fragment of Diabelli's melody. In the opera Don Giovanni, Leporello sings, Night and day I slave away for one who does not appreciate it. I put up with wind and rain, eat and sleep badly. I want to be a gentleman and to give up my servitude. This aria is the stuff of every disgruntled contract worker since the beginning of time, including Beethoven himself. According to Beethoven's friend and student, Carl Czerny, Beethoven created this variation in reply to Anton Diabelli's insistence that Beethoven finish composing his set of variations. Musical humor? From the legendary curmudgeon Van Beethoven? Yes, humor. Admittedly, when Beethoven completed his Diabelli variations in 1823, he was a mess, physically and emotionally. But he had not lost his taste for fun. He loved hanging out with his buds and drinking, smoking his pipe, and telling or hearing a good story. And when he laughed, which we are told was quite often, he did so with abandon. Truly, by every account, Beethoven thoroughly enjoyed composing the variations. According to Carl Czerny, quote, "Beethoven wrote these variations in a merry mood," unquote. According to Beethoven's assistant, Anton Schindler, who we can't always believe, but in this case, we can, the composition of the work, quote, "amused Beethoven to a rare degree. It was written in a rosy mood, and it is bubbling with humor," unquote. According to Wilhelm von Lenz, 1809-1883, one of Beethoven's earliest biographers and a most perceptive Beethovenian, the master shines through in the Diabelli variations as, quote, "the most thoroughly initiated high priest of humor," unquote. Ha! I'd wager that very few of us ever considered Beethoven a high priest of humor. Von Lenz goes on to call Beethoven's Diabelli variations, quote, "a satire on their theme," unquote. Bingo. A satire on their theme. The entire set of variations is infused with a sense of parody, sometimes overt, as in the previously mentioned Variation 22, or, for example, in the clunky and purposely overblown mock heroic march that is Variation 1, which was, incidentally, the last variation Beethoven wrote. Though most of the time Beethoven's parody of Diabelli's theme is rather more subtle. But the parodistic, satirical element that dominates the set must be recognized, and any pianist who plays the piece as if it were a big hunk and heroic work will fail Beethoven miserably. The brilliant and most intelligent German pianist Alfred Brendel, born 1931, yes, he is still with us, writes of the Diabelli variations, quote, "the theme does not reign over its unruly offspring. Instead of being confirmed, adorned, and glorified, Diabelli's theme is parodied, ridiculed, disclaimed, transfigured, mourned, stamped out, and finally uplifted," unquote. That's it for now. We will pick up from here in tomorrow's Dr. Bob Prescribes post. We still need to discuss just why Beethoven chose to compose 33 variations. We still need to discuss the set's intimate relationship to Bach's Goldberg variations. And what magic makes the recently departed pianist Maurizio Pollini's performance so very special? A scheduling note before I leave you. I will be in Vienna leading a tour starting on April 13th, which, sadly, will preclude me from posting Music History Monday podcasts on April 15th and April 22nd. I will, however, be posting daily reports from Vienna on my Patreon site. I would be remiss, then, if I didn't invite everyone who is not already a subscribing member to join me at Patreon and partake in the fun. Thank you. To sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by The Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com.